What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's sometimes delayed, but never abandoned. Today, potentially the final outing for my Twisting Their Melon Man line as Mickey leaves Tranmere, the game that didn't finish, War knocking on the door to survival, Paul's warning for dismal derby, and Austin's foreplay ends in disappointing outcome. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Here we are again, team, a little bit later than normal due to existing media commitments, but we are back in your ears to talk about the things that have happened in the Football League and in one case, the FA Cup as well. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined today by Adrian Clark. How are you doing, Adrian?
Hello. Yeah, very good. Thank you, Matt. The extra day helped, I think. I think that's a really strong intro. You had a little bit more time to plan it, to put it together. It was strong.
Yeah, did a recovery session on Monday and that put some more gas in the tank, I think. Sam Parkin's also with us. You two have both been so busy over these past few days. Sam, in particular, you seem to be everywhere I want to be.
I had the weekend off, Matt.
Other than that, though.
I was on the beach in the light drizzle in Bournemouth. For a couple of days, but discussing the promotion candidates in the championship alongside a few esteemed colleagues from EFL circles. Don Goodman, David Prutton, Gab Sutton of this parish on the other week, and some really good supporters. So maybe we should have a little fans forum when it gets down to the wire, eh?
Right, we'll start with some news shortly, but first, how about this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, let's get into that news then. We're starting today with Wigan Athletic, who've been docked 3 points by the EFL for failing to pay player salaries in March. They were previously given a suspended penalty for a similar breach. New charges have also been issued for failure to pay and non-compliance. The owner, Abdul Rahman Al Jazmi, is going to be charged with misconduct. He and the club seemingly burying their head in the sand. They blame the delays on recent liquidity issues, but described their financial state as robust, which sounds pretty inaccurate if you can't pay the players' wages. Clarkey, we see this quite a lot, don't we, with teams getting docked points or whatever. It feels to me in this case that it is particularly unfair because it's the players who suffer as much as anybody when a team gets docked point, and they're already suffering because they haven't been paid this month.
Yeah, it's a good point. It is, but you can't allow it to go on, can you? I think you have to be really, really strict with this. You can't not pay salary to the players, to the staff, to everybody. We've all got bills to pay, and it's a disgrace, really. I do think that there should be more power maybe to repossess clubs from owners that don't pay wages on time. You see it in real life. If someone doesn't pay their mortgage, they get their house repossessed. Maybe that's what should happen at football clubs, and maybe that will prompt owners not to be quite as shoddy, because it doesn't seem to me as if Wigan's owners care that they lose 3 points. They knew this was coming. Suspended penalty. I think it's the fourth time they've been warned. They were told to put extra money in this floating account to cover the costs of wages if they were short 1 month. They didn't do that. So, yeah, you've got to punish them. But personally, I would prefer if the owners themselves, they're the ones that miss out.
So the owners, Sam, should get some punishment, but the EFL should get some criticism as well, shouldn't they? Because how many years now have we been talking about Wigan as a crisis club, and they wave through these latest owners, and it seems like they're having the same issues that people before them had?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, not that the butt doesn't stop with the EFL, but there's certain improvements that we'd still like to see there, and this stop happening across the board, really. You feel for the players today. Always speak about my own experiences in this kind of situation. It's very difficult for any manager to galvanise a dressing room, especially when you're already in a relegation battle. How demoralising to have another 3 points taken away. So that'll be a real flat place. And there's been an improvement, I would say, in the level of performance in the last few weeks. They're going to need snookers now. And, you know, away from this latest indiscretion, it's been an absolute mess at that club throughout this season. I mean, we've been scathing about some managerial departures and appointments, none more so than I don't think the stuff that's gone on at Wigan this year. Liam Richardson would probably have them sitting prettier in this table. Well, certainly now the Colo Touré appointment was just a disaster, really, from the first time I saw them trying to play lovely expansive stuff with a team that clearly not capable right now. So it's been a disaster under this ownership for a number of years. Slightly better recently under Sean Maloney, but yeah, they need snookers now, don't they?
Yeah. Is that them down then, Sam? Because what are they, 8 points adrift? I think that's one relegation spot sorted. The bit on the players, I do get it. In the here and now, they're feeling extra flat because they've lost 3 points. But how many players want to stay at a club where you can't be guaranteed to get paid? I mean, surely they're all eyeing up a move, aren't they?
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah, again, my own experience, it really separates kind of the dressing room. I would say when everyone's got their own kind of agendas, people will be starting to speak to agents, won't they, and find out what the options are for the summer. So it's difficult for Sean Maloney to refocus everyone on the football. I think that's only natural, and that certainly was an issue in my past, and I'm sure that's what the Wigan guys are experiencing now.
Yeah, on the pitch, the only two wins they've had since the middle of October were against fellow strugglers Blackpool and Huddersfield. When they come back after the break on April Fool's Day, home to QPR, which reeks of must win for both sides. Speaking of the EFL and what they're up to, they're going to have to look into the decision to abandon Rotherham's game with Cardiff at the weekend. Torrential rain forced the players off in the 47th minute. There was a delay for 45 minutes whilst they waited for conditions to improve. When they didn't, ref Oliver Langford called it off. Cardiff were 1-0 up and obviously therefore fuming when the decision was made. Rotherham boss Matt Taylor felt it was right for player safety. He said, if we'd gone back out there 2 hours later, the players in a huge position of risk, not from the pitch itself, but from cooling down and warming up again. As for Cardiff, they haven't said anything publicly as we record, but the BBC Wales commentator Dylan Griffiths, who was there, said, it was a shock to see the sprinklers were on during half-time. I can understand Cardiff's frustration. It took nearly 20 minutes for Rotherham's ground staff to appear to try and clear the water, and even then, only a small number of staff were on the pitch. I find it interesting, Sam, here, that there's this little bit of mudslinging going around from Cardiff supporters who were there saying, well, Rotherham actually didn't make that much effort to get it cleared and get the game played. It was only 1-0 at the time. It wasn't like they were 3-0 down, was it? So I kind of feel like that might not be the case, because you don't want to have to then get this, as will presumably be the case, shoehorned in, I don't know, third week of April, when you end up getting a three-game week and you don't know what the state of play is going to be then. Surely Rotherham would have wanted to carry on as well.
You'd have thought so. See, I wasn't at the game. I don't know how dominant Cardiff were, but yeah, it's a real important time of the season. Cardiff are desperate for the points. The performances and the wins haven't been forthcoming as we maybe anticipated since they made the change. So yeah, I can understand them being disappointed. There's obviously a few videos that are very amusing that have been doing the rounds on social media, but it's difficult to jump on the individuals involved too much, because you don't know the circumstances of the ground staff pushing water back on and the sprinklers being on. Maybe that was a setting that was always going to happen or something. I don't know. But yeah, and highly amusing seeing the referee and Howard Webb there. That was good fun, wasn't it? What was Howard Webb doing there?
He's a local boy. I don't think he was. I think he's just a local boy. He fancied taking in some football, but couldn't resist sticking his beak in when it got flooded.
Yeah. the same manner that I destroy people's tweets every week. Howard, stand there, my friend, surely. need for him.
That's the copper in him trying to get involved in everything, I think.
What I'm trying to say is nobody really knows, do they? Rotherham may very well have had some conversations in their dressing room. Let's try and get it off. You know, that does go on. It went on certainly during my career. If you're particularly struck by injury and there's similar circumstances or whatever. So we're not privy to that. But yes, I saw one for Cardiff given their predicament.
Nothing could have got that game on. I mean, it was like a swimming pool by the touchline. It just stinks of wow, wow, wow. They're just crying about it, aren't they, Cardiff City? You just got to get on with it and accept that it's bad luck on their part. It happens. I've played in games that get fogged off, waterlogged. You might be winning, you might be losing. It's nothing sinister here. It's just bad luck on their part. And anyone that tries to come out and say, oh, we'll start the game at the point that it finished is garbage. I mean, you're never going to have the same players available, are you? I think for any kind of rematch, I wouldn't have thought, unless it was played the next day. You've just got to take it on the chin if you're Cardiff. It's a bit of a desperate look, if I'm being honest.
Okay, frantically deletes the question I put in the doc. Would it not be fairer to start the game in the 47th minute with Cardiff 1-0?
All right, we'll ask Sam then. Is that a nonsense question?
Yeah, unless they stayed over in Rotherham, the weather drastically improves in 12 hours and then they can get the same team out there the next day. But yeah, for the facts that Adrian just stated, is probably not the right decision, is it?
It's a moot point anyway. FA rules state, in the event of a competition match not being played or abandoned owing to causes over which neither club has control, it should be played in its entirety on a date to be mutually agreed by the two clubs and approved by the competition. So we'll see whenever that is. Just the one manager sacked for us to talk about this week. It's Mickey Mellon looking for a new job. He's departed Tranmere. He saw his second spell at Prenton Park come to an end after Rovers slipped to 14th in the League Two standings following Saturday's 3-1 home reverse to Newport. Chairman Mark Palios said, "I reluctantly came to the conclusion that a change was needed as we start recruitment preparations for next season." Ian Dawes is the caretaker, Sam, whilst they consider this permanent replacement. He's joint favourite, as I looked this morning, to get the gig on a full-time basis with Danny Cowley. I wondered if this might suit Carl Robinson in terms of location, if not division. Anybody else that you think might be floating around that aren't among the normal runners and riders?
I think it's a difficult job right now, just purely on the quality that Mickey Mellon's had in his squad this season. So I'd be very surprised if I said this about, who did I say about the other day? Ben Garner, and he took the job in about 2 hours later. I'd be surprised if, despite the location, if Carl Robinson would want this. He's better than League Two, a team in the lower reaches of League Two at the moment as well. David Artell's a name that I've seen. It seems that the model at Tranmere has been to go with younger players, recruited, probably polish them up, give them game time and sell them on. It seems to have been a little bit of a switch from what they had previously, which was quite an experienced side. If you think of when, I think Ian Dawes and, was it Andy Parkinson? I think that's his first name, were in charge previously for a brief spell. They had James Vaughan, Jay Spearing, Kane Woolery, you know, some really, Peter Clark probably was there, some really experienced campaigners. So I think this switch in philosophy, if you like, as come back to bite them somewhat, and hopefully people will remember the great times under Mickey Mellon, because he's been a brilliant manager for them, and he's got quite toxic. Even just seeing the highlights from the weekend, when the first, second, third goes in, you could see the reaction of the fans, because there was no one there in the home stand. So it's probably the right time for all concerned. But yeah, just to double down, he's been a brilliant manager for them, a couple of promotions, and I'm sure he'll come back. But yeah, they need a change. They need the supporters back on board, and that normally comes with a managerial switch.
Yeah, they just need a fresh voice, someone to breathe some new energy into the place. Tranmere games have featured around 2 goals a game this season. Last season, it was exactly the same, which was the lowest in League Two. They've not been a great watch, have they, for a long time, Tranmere? Pretty tight at the back. They don't score very many goals. You know me, I've looked at all the metrics for Tranmere this season, and I've got to say that on and off the ball, Tranmere Rovers are absolutely mid-table at everything. There's nothing disastrous about them, but there's no real key strengths or obvious plus points either. They are middle of the road, and really at that level, for the size of the club, that's not good enough. They need to be challenging around the playoffs for sure. So yeah, not surprised that they've made this change, but yeah, he should be remembered fondly for what he did in his first spell.
Just quickly, thinking back to the end of the summer, or maybe into September, they won 5 or 6 straight games and didn't concede. And I remember I did the scouting report on Dinel Simiu, who went off to Morecambe, I think, which surprised quite a few, obviously a division up, but he's not played as regularly. And also they've had Hemmings and Kieran Morris out long term. And I think, you know, just speaking about the senior players that were there previously, they're two of their most creative and best chances of a goal. So I don't think the injuries have been too kind, but funny because during that period, we were probably anticipating them making a run at the playoffs at least. So it's been a little bit of a fall from grace.
Yeah, they were only 2 points outside of it after that five-game run, and Simeon scored in the last of those matches. So they're looking out for a new boss. So we're going to do our weekend review next. Let's start by dipping our toes in the FA Cup. Surely something an overzealous winner has said in the Wembley dressing room over the years. Sheffield United will have the honour of getting hammered by Manchester City in the FA Cup semi-final after they saw off Blackburn in a 3-2 thriller at Bramall Lane on Sunday. What do you want to talk about from this, Adrian? That the fact that we saw VAR in a championship game, the fact that the guy who gets the winning goal doesn't get to play in the semi, or just Sheffield United having a great week?
Yeah, let's start with that. I hammered them. I think on the last podcast said they were playing cautious football. And I think that I wasn't alone in thinking that. A lot of the Blades fans were moaning about similar things. And they've had a great week. They've attacked both matches really, really positively. First the one at Sunderland, then this cup game. They've gone back to being a front foot. Let's go and release that handbrake side. And it made for a brilliant cup tie, didn't it? I think it was a wonderful advert for the championship.
Best day of Ali McCoy's life.
He loved it, didn't he? Yeah, didn't he say it was second only to the World Cup final, which was clearly just ridiculously good. I thought it was a tremendous match, and the winning goal was worthy of it, wasn't it? It was an absolutely superb strike from Doyle. So yeah, from Blackburn's end, I think they can take great heart from the performance. At times this season, they've been really stodgy and cautious, and they haven't looked very exciting. But I think of late, there's been a bit of a change. John Dow Thomason has been a little bit more front foot, been a bit more courageous and daring. And that their attacking players are excellent, Blackburn Rovers, and we saw that in this game, created some superb chances. So I think they can feel heartened, and it does look like Sheffield United are back. But yeah, they're going to get absolutely destroyed, aren't they, at Wembley against Manchester City. I mean, you've seen what they did to Burnley the other day. It's it's a little bit cruel, isn't it?
Rule on Tommy Doyle as well. James McAtee too, Sam, obviously. But both Tommy Doyle's grandfathers played for Manchester City. So how massive would it be for him and the family if he could play against them in an FA Cup semi-final? Are you of the opinion, like I am, that if you loan a player to another club, then they get to play against you? They just get to play in any game that they're eligible for? Or is it right that they're not allowed to?
Two sides to it, isn't there? You know, they've been...
Come on, no sitting on the fence, Sam. Is it right or is it wrong? Come on.
There's two sides to it, because if they've been educated, coached all the way through the system at Manchester City, invested in, and then they score the winning goal, then that could not only hinders Manchester City in the short term, but it could hinder that player as well when they go back. Because...
What, they're going to hold it against him?
No, I'd probably not hold it against them, but it's still... You know, they're still Manchester City's player. I think if they go back there in the short term, it's a little bit peculiar, isn't it? If they're going to be part of the first team squad next season. So I don't know. I can understand why it's there, whether it's right or wrong. You know, I understand what you say, Matt. I think once you're deemed surplus to requirements, to use the football terminology, then you should be able to do whatever. But, you know, we're talking about one of the biggest clubs in the world here with the biggest pool of players. You know, there's a plethora of young lads that are going to be nowhere near that first team. So you probably don't envisage this is going to happen too often. It's a shame for him. And like Clarkie said, we spoke about this a lot yesterday. This is a defining week for Sheffield United potentially, because Paul Heckenbottom could have been stubborn, I reckon, and just kept the same team and kept plodding along. But he's made real courageous changes, I think, and putting these two lads in. And you can see the impact that they've had, not only in the victory on the weekend, but also in that Sunderland win. So massive for them. Gives him the luxury of now probably bringing in Norwood, Fleck maybe for that semi-final, giving those two young lads a bit of a breather. And I think they, you know, this is a real big moment for Sheffield United season, which could actually see them, you know, hold off the threat of Middlesbrough, just because they've had such a morale boosting week. But yeah, I don't know. I am on the fence with it, with those two boys playing, but I can't give you a definitive reason why. Sorry.
Fair enough. Sheffield United then, they'll be hoping they get to go to Wembley twice, but they'll be desperate not to get there three times, I guess. Let's get back to league matters. And if you ask Siri to define the championship, your search will likely return Blackpool beating QPR 6-1 on Tuesday and then losing 4-1 to Coventry on Saturday, both at Bloomfield Road. Let's hear Mick McCarthy doing Mick McCarthy things, aka talking about the ref's decision not to send off Victor Gyökeres, while some seagulls squawk in the background.
I'm not so sure that Gyökeres should have been on the pitch having punched Callum Connolly, and just seeing the referee, he said he didn't punch him. He gave him a right, then a left, and then he followed through with his foot as well. So
that was sort of the key talking point from this game. Was it Clarkie? Obviously, Gyökeres goes on to set up the first goal for Coventry. Should he have been on the pitch at that stage?
Yeah, I think there's an argument that he got away with one. Yeah, he definitely, it was a bit of a forearm smash, wasn't it? And I think he could easily have seen red. And that, what an impact that might have had on the game, but also on Coventry's chances of reaching the playoffs, because he would have faced a three-game ban at least. So, yeah, big moment. But it fell Coventry's way. This has always been the way. You know, you get some decisions, you don't get them. It's pot luck sometimes. I think they've got a chance actually of reaching the playoffs. You've got to keep your eye on Coventry moving forward. They're only 3 points off of sixth place at the moment. They're 9 unbeaten, and their fixtures are not exclusively against mid-table opponents, but there's a big chunk of their remaining games against teams that might not have a whole lot to play for. So, yeah, watch the Sky Blues, I think. I think there's a real chance for them, especially with Gyökeres in such good form, because if he's not scoring, and he didn't score in this game, he is wreaking havoc. He's creating chances. He's making assists. And the others around him played ever so well in this game. Obviously, Ben Sheaf was superb. I think it was his 100th match for Coventry, former Arsenal youngster. And what a strike it was. And this was a game full of good goals. But I also feel that one of the stories of the game is maybe the away fans. I think over 4,000 did the Blackpool away day. It's a good weekender, isn't it? And they were absolutely on fire. And I definitely feel that they roared the team on. Just looking at the extended highlights as I did of this match, the tempo of Coventry's play, I think, was really sharp. And part of that, in my opinion, is that there were so many Coventry fans there making a great noise that it genuinely spurred them on.
All right. Can I interest you, therefore, in Quinbet's pricing of 20-1 for Coventry to be promoted?
It's a good price. It is a good price. But if Middlesbrough are in the playoffs, or Sheffield United, and you'd imagine, well, one of them will be, yeah, they'll be heavy favourites, won't they? But 20-1 is a good price, because I think they have a shot at getting in, sneaking in at sixth.
What have we got on West Brom, Matt?
To get promoted, 7-1.
You see, that's wrong in my mind. There shouldn't be such a discrepancy between the two.
No.
I would say they've got an even outside chance, West Brom and Cov. So good price from Quinbet.
Clarkie says that's wrong. I say many thanks to Quinbet for sponsoring the podcast and move fairly swiftly on. Well, if you had a coupon buster this weekend in the Championship, it probably came at the Den. Huddersfield upsetting, promotion chasing Millwall. Neil Warnock has managed to get himself in every episode of this podcast since he resurfaced. You've got to respect the hustle, the man. Danny Ward, Sam, we've been spoken about how Huddersfield lack goals. This was his first since October. It's also the first scored by a Huddersfield player since mid-February. And we wrote them off, didn't we? Whether it was last week or the week before, they're only 4 points from safety, but they've got this horrible run of games coming up. But I guess you go into that feeling like you can take a point if you won at Millwall.
He's got to be in this episode just so you can do an impression of the Sheffield United documentary when he was in London, in the dugout, bemoaning the fact that it's
that was at Millwall as well, wasn't it?
That was at Millwall. Go on, take it away. Listeners will know what I'm referring to. Yeah, amazing victory. I think Millwall have a problem when teams sit in, make it ugly, essentially do what Millwall do to the better sides in the division. You only have to look at the recent brilliant results at the Den against Sheffield United and Burnley to see that they're happier when they can spoil, they can sit in, they can bully from set pieces. Huddersfield wanted to do all those similar traits at the weekend. I mean, Mills started really well, 12 attempts in the first half. I think Huddersfield only had 2 attempts on the target throughout the piece, but obviously got the all-in important goal. And I thought the most decisive moment of this game probably came before any action with Neil Warnock's lineup. Romani Edmonds Green in midfield. He's a centre half, really did well for Rotherham previously. He played in central midfield with Jonathan Hogg. The back four now at Huddersfield. Pearson's playing at right back. Lees, Helic, Ruffles, left back. really good experience, solid. You know, they're not going to score loads of goals. If they can stop shipping them at the other end, they've got half a chance. And, you know, this was a really good tactical setup from Neil Warnock. You can see that he's got his kind of lads that he wants in the trenches now. Other than Jonathan Hogg, I wasn't too sure who these guys were going to be, but it's starting to take shape. And fewer than 100 passes completed in this game. I thought it was an interesting stat to pick out, but kind of surmised the performance, the doggedness of this performance. And a little bit of a red flag, I think, for Millwall, because Romani Edmonds-Green did such a good job on Fleming. Bradshaw has been nursed through the last few weeks and months because he's the only real out-and-out forward at Millwall. If you stop those two, you're obviously going to really damage Millwall's chances of winning games. And you look at the other playoff contenders, I'm not sure too many of them would have lost at home to Huddersfield. So interesting to see how they respond, Millwall. April the 1st, away at West Brom. And I think if West Bromwich Albion have got any chance of getting in these playoffs, they have to win this game. And I think there'll be a two-point gap between the two if that happens. So that is a massive, massive away day for Millwall to show that they're potential promotion playoff candidates.
Yeah, West Brom and then Luton next for Millwall. They had gone 11 unbeaten at home in the league, but they've lost two of their last three and only won 3 of 10. Let's head into League One, where Derby County lost 2-0 at home to Fleetwood Town. My heart is full. Here's what Derby boss Paul Warren had to say.
We just looked miles off the team that I know. So, you know, I'm embarrassed, really, because I've never seen one of my teams play like that. And a bit surprised to a certain extent. We weren't great in training yesterday. I probably should have been braver and changed the team more. So that's on me. But, you know, whichever 11 I put out, I expect a better performance than that, and everyone who turned up did.
So that's Derby, Clarkey. In the other dugout, I wonder if we've given enough praise to Scott Brown. I remember we criticised something that he said early in his tenure, but it was a fairly risky appointment, which Fleetwood have done before, but they're nicely tucked in mid-table, and perfectly respectable for his first season, right? And he looks okay with hair too.
He does, yeah. I think Scott Brown is one of the more underrated managers in EFL at the moment, because Fleetwood are sort of sailing along in mid-table. No one's taking too much notice of them, but I think he's doing a fine job. I really do. They're a well-coached team. And the win against Derby was tactically outstanding. You know, they had to soak up a lot of pressure. They went with a back five. They have been playing 4-1-4-1 in recent games. They switched it up, 5-3-2, and it was a classic counter-attacking display. Hold off Derby, hold them off, and then bang, go and strike on the break. And the two goals were sensational, got to say. Stockley smashes one in off the crossbar. No, it hits the goalie and goes in, but it's effectively Stockley's goal. Great strike. And then the Carlos Mendes Gomez breakaway is tremendous. I think it's his seventh goal of the season. He seems back to the form that got him a move to Luton in the first place. But going back to Fleetwood this season, under Scott Brown, defensively, they are super solid. Only once all season have they conceded more than two goals in a game. That's amazing. This is Fleetwood. They're in mid-table. They're not expected to challenge for promotion. Nobody has found it easy to score goals against Fleetwood. Only Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday can match that, by the way. They've let in 25 goals in open play. That is right up there. I think six of the top eight sides can better it, and that's it. So again, really, really solid at the back. And then they've got this ability to counter. So I think what he's done is set the platform there to build from. He's made them hard to beat. He's turned them into a counter-attacking side. And then in January, what he did was bring in a lot of attacking quality with Marriott coming in, Stockley, and they're starting to pick up a few more points. So yeah, I think next year under Scott Brown, Fleetwood will be interesting ones to watch, especially if they invest in maybe other areas of the field or in more, you know, other forward players, because I think they've got a coach that will keep them very, very well organised. They just need the sprinkling of real quality in forward areas.
Yeah, 2 points they survived by last season. So to have a 10-point gap now is astonishing, really. Huge credit to Scott Brown. And I think everyone was probably a little, even though, you know, Fleetwood have got, you know, recent history of appointing rookie managers, I think it's taken everyone by surprise, probably a little bit because of the type of player he was and the type of character. So that probably went against him and people had their preconceptions of what he was going to be like. But I probably wheeled this story out a few times when I did my coaching badges for him, with him, sorry. Really likable guy. And immediately when I was on the training ground with him, incredible understanding of not only his position, but where other people used to have to be as well on a football pitch. So I'm not completely surprised, but having seen them this season, as Clarkie said, they look like they all know their roles, which suggests to me that him and Stephen Whittaker are already really promising coaches.
So they're going well. Also in League One, Pompey are now 6 points off the playoffs with a game in hand after the football manager Jose Mourinho regen John Mousinho oversaw a 2-0 win for Portsmouth at Bristol Rovers. They got a bit lucky here, didn't they, Sam? Because Colby Bishop was offside for the opener and then there was a bit of dispute about the penalty that he stuck away for the second.
Yeah, it wasn't much between the two sides. The striker was the biggest difference, and the goalkeeper, I think, made six saves. Matt Macy for Portsmouth. He's had six clean sheets in the 12 games that he's played under Mousinho. So he's been a big plus point, I think. But yeah, I think it was offside. I don't think the second goal should have been a penalty either. So a little bit fortuitous in terms of the big decisions going against Bristol Rovers. But Colby Bishop, 6-6 for him now after a little bit of a lean spell. I think they're the two stories, really, the goalkeeper and the centre forward from the weekend, but also the impact of Tunnicliffe since Mousinho came into the club. I think he's played every game. He looked like he was on the way out, and good technical midfield player. I think they have the instruction, the two number eights to make the box and get joined in the attacking play. Rafferty, very good as well. I know that John Harley's been really impressed with him at fullback since he went to the club. So it's been a really good start for him. 8 wins in 14, 7 wins in 23 previously under the Cowleys. And they had 6 wins in a row through August and September. So it was a real lean period when he took over. They kind of need snookers, but it's not, you know, completely ruled out them making the playoffs this year. I just think they have no pressure on them, Portsmouth. I think that's probably a lovely place for a management, new management team and a squad of players to be going into work every day. I think if the improvement in performances were evident, and they have been, and the results were decent, then the supporters would be with them. And it's all about next season, really, for Pompey. For Rovers, a little idea I've had just come to mind this last minute.
Epiphany?
Yeah. We all know about Keys and Grey Corner on Football Clichés. I think we need a Joey Barton corner, because this that I read in the lead up to this game is magnificent. Aaron Collins stripped of the captaincy because he ducked out of a header against Wycombe Wanderers in the week or in the previous game. They're talismanic, Aaron Collins.
He's been superb this season.
26 goal involvements, not 66, but he's been the captain recently. They've got a policy at Bristol Rovers, 3 strikes and you're out, essentially, 3 indiscretions, and he wants you out of the football club. And they call them effort errors. And it's from Saracens rugby team where he's got this idea. There's some kind of link there. But yeah, so he disciplined young Aaron. I didn't check to see if he did in fact lose the armband at the weekend. But he's had it in for him. His best player in the last 7 days, which seems a bit off.
It's mental. I kind of get the notion of it, you know, these effort errors, but
I get that. But if some of my former teammates got punished every time they ducked out of a header, Clarkie, you'd never kick the ball for anyone, would you?
I wouldn't have got a contract anywhere. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I always got accused of having no shampoo.
I played with players. I'm thinking of two right now, and Brian probably listens. Brian Howard, he can respond, but I'm more thinking of his if his mate Sammy Igo, they played on opposite flanks. Those two would run 20 yards in the opposite direction when the ball was in flight and probably laugh about it or probably try and take it down on their toe, you know? So I've played with so many players like that.
Shouldn't Aaron Collins be playing up front as well, by the way? I think he's sort of playing out wide at the moment. I don't know. I don't know if he's getting the best use of him. He's had a great season. I'd be looking after him if I was Joey rather than, you know, maybe alienating him. Very quickly, did you spot this? Lewis Gibson, the centre-half for Bristol Rovers, vociferously pointing at his goalkeeper when that penalty was being taken. Go this way. He's pointing, saying, make sure you dive left. And of course, the goalie did dive left. and the penalty went right. So, so blame Lewis Gibson for that one.
That's definitely an effort error, but I don't know, maybe Jarrell Kwanzaa got a bonus for getting sent up and then kicking up a bit of aggro. That's more up Joey Barton Street, isn't it? Sam says snookers for Portsmouth. They're only 7 points off the playoffs. They've got a game in hand, and their next two are at home to Port Vale and Forest Green. They are 33-1 for promotion this season with Quinbet. Let's go into League Two. What a game it was at Spotland, where Rochdale and Swindon Town shared 8 goals and a point each in a 4-4 barn burner. Stone cold Charlie Austin got all 4 for the Robins. He was left frustrated, though, after Ian Henderson notched a 94th minute leveller. That goal saw him equal Reg Jenkins' record for most league goals for Dale, that number 119. You spoke to Charlie Austin on the radio on Monday, Sam.
I did. Did I tell you that?
No, I just looked at your Twitter or TalkSport 2's Twitter, or whatever it was.
Yeah, and he was on really good form, actually. I had read this prior to speaking to him, but he said that he apologised in the dressing room because Ian Henderson, I don't think was his man, but maybe was in his space at the near post when he equalised for Rochdale. So he said that was his first thing that he did when he went in the dressing room. He held his hands up and apologised to the boys, which I thought was nice. Loved the fourth goal. Little bit disguise, difficult finish, ball coming across him, whipped into the top corner. And yeah, most welcome his return to goals because I think he'd gone 6 games without scoring. He's up to 8 now for the season. He said last night that double figures was his aim, his personal aim, but obviously very disappointed that Swindon's kind of playoff challenges subsided in recent weeks. And yeah, a lot of finger pointing really at the hierarchy at Swindon, at the mistakes that they perceive to have been made in the window, letting experienced players go, Gladwin, Reed, Angus McDonald, most importantly, and left them with a really, really youthful looking rear guard. Tom Clayton's a very good player, had an excellent season after joining from Liverpool. The latest recruit was a free, Tom Brewitt, who's been playing in the second tier in the States. So to imagine that he's going to come in and hit the ground running was probably unrealistic. And, you know, the defensive way was a clear to see at the weekend. Rochdale improving. I think they've only lost one of the last 4, scoring goals, looking a bit more creative, but yeah, going to be a tough ask for them to remain in the division despite a really spirited display, which, having spoken to a few people and watched the highlight, they could have won it after getting back to 4-4.
What a save at the end. Sol Brin, wasn't it, at the end? I mean, he's conceded 4, but he's the hero.
Yeah, and they missed a glaring opportunity, didn't they, where the lunging in player nearly missed the stand with his attempted finish. So I've never heard, you know, so much apathy towards a 4-4 in all my life. It sounds like, you know, both sets of supporters and management teams just left feeling there was such a distinct lack of quality in so many areas of our games, despite both teams finding the net 4 times.
That, nothing wrong with the quality of that Danny Lloyd strike, by the way.
Oh,
that
amazing.
Was a beauty. Yeah,
that was outstanding.
Yeah, not a great weekend for Rochdale, though, because Hartlepool got a good point away at Bradford. Crawley won at Wimbledon, and Colchester got a point, which is the final game we're going to talk about. A great comeback from them at Leighton Orient. They were 2-0 down. They scored 2 goals really late on, but sadly overshadowed after an abusive chance from some U supporters aimed at the late Leighton Orient boss, Justin Edinburgh. His son, Charlie, said in a statement, "My dad's legacy and reputation will never be forgotten, and that alone outweighs any negativity or abuse." Thought Colchester themselves did well here, Clarkie. They came out and condemned it very, very swiftly. Not for the first time this season, a small minority of those in the away section have acted in a shameful manner, this time making vile chants that no decent person would make and are in no way shared by Colchester United or the vast majority of our fans. And their supporters group, Blue White Army, have said they've made a donation to the Justin Edinburgh Foundation. So that's pretty unequivocal from Colchester, isn't it? And it's obviously, you know, not their fault that some morons decided to do that.
Yeah, they've dragged the name of the club, you know, through the gutter, haven't they, these idiots? And look, they can be weeded out. I mean, it's not as if Colchester have a huge following. People will know who they are. Get them out. Get them banned. Because it's not right. You know, it's this isn't banter. This is just sort of a vile, sort of sickening chant. And yeah, they deserve to be punished for that. But yeah, well done the club for not messing around. And they also recognise that it's not the first time this season that this section of supporters have let the club down. So yeah, I think that gives them even more power to potentially say, look, we don't want you coming anymore. So we'll have to see what happens there. In terms of what happened on the pitch, well played, Colchester, for not giving up. You know, they'd lost their previous four games, had a really tough run of fixtures. Really, they've played some opponents all gunning for promotion, narrowly lost them. They hadn't scored in five games. They're away to Leyton Orient team that have got 14 clean sheets in 19 home games, which is just off the scale good. So if anyone could have been excused for thinking 2-0, that's it, it's all over, it's not going to happen for us, it's Colchester United. But they didn't. They kept plugging away. And the goals were good. One from a corner, nice little near post flick. And then the second goal, the equaliser from Noah Chilvers, was sensational because he's on the break. He's driving down the middle of the pitch. He's got a runner to his left, got a runner to his right. He probably should have played either of them in. And he's totally selfish. And he thinks, no, I'm going to go for glory here. He beats the man. And then he sticks it in the top bin. It's absolutely superb from him. A spectacular winning goal, worthy of earning a point. And that just lifts Colchester when they need it because, yeah, like you say, there are signs of life for Rochdale, Hartlepool and even Crawley beneath them. They've been dragged back into it, Colchester United, so they needed this point. And yeah, it was an excellent performance. You've got to play very, very well to get anything out of a game at the leaders. And Richie Wellen said afterwards, I'm not upset, he said, because we weren't at it the whole game. I think a point is the most we deserve. So good honesty from him too.
Yeah, and he knows that his team are more than likely just going up anyway. I guess Colchester 5 points above the relegation zone. And that is just about that for today's show. But of course, I've got a tweet of the week for the chaps to run the rule over. I don't want to prejudice what you're about to say, Sam, but I think this might be one of, if not the best, that we've analysed this season. It comes from Burton Albion's John Brayford. This is after their weekend win away to Port Vale. It's a picture of John, captain's armband on, tattoos on both arms, hands on hips, looking up to the heavens as spots of rain surround him. And he says, and God gave us ... Burton Albion away days, !! At Burton Albion FC. It's a nice break from the standard routine, isn't it, Sam? I'm sure you're going to pick it apart and find something to criticise, but I enjoyed this one.
Nice break from being beaten 4-0 in their previous away game at Ipswich Town. No, I like this. I agree with what you say, Matt. It's different. Yeah, I enjoy it, but I've been back through some of his previous tweets, and let me tell you, they're not all this good. So, no. This in isolation, well played, John. It's probably one of the highest marks I'm likely to give for the entirety of this season. I'd give that an 8.
Okay, I'm just going back through his other content. I don't think it's particularly offensive. What did you make of this one, Clarky?
Yeah, I thought it was a work of art. That's what I thought. I thought the photograph was quite spectacular, actually. It's the kind of photograph that he should probably put on a canvas somewhere on his landing. You know, it was a really nice sort of nice looking photograph. And I think, yeah, on the back of a really dramatic or an excellent away win, 3-2 at Port Vale, I think it was a good shout from him. So no, yeah, artistic tweet of the season, I think.
To be fair,
from an EFL player.
I think I just kind of like glanced at it now that I've got it in front of me. I thought it was probably just the cracks on my iPhone screen rather than the rain. So the rain is good. The tats work, don't they, actually? The beard even adds a little bit to it. So it's probably even better, you know, now that I've had a proper opportunity to feast my eyes over it. So well done, John. That's a 9.
Put some pressure on us then, Clarky, and our social media output. Tell people how they can be a part of that.
Yeah, don't expect too much. Not too much artistry from any of us. Yeah, look, on Twitter, it's EFL at EFL What The. So it's sort of back to front. We're putting some content out on Twitter as well these days. On Instagram, it's at What The EFL. It's the same on TikTok. So yeah, look, if you're on those platforms, give us a follow. we'll put out these videos. And look, if you share them, like them and whatnot, it just helps to generate a bit more traction. Send them to supporters of the club that you follow. And we just want to get the name out there. We want more and more people that love the EFL to listen to the podcast. That's the aim of the game. And hopefully, you can help us reach more people.
Yeah, and another way you could help us out would be to give us a good rating and a nice review on your podcast platform of choice, if that is a thing. And something you're prepared to do, we'd appreciate it. Before we go, a final reminder for the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. For new customers that sign up only, you can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. If you do that, by the way, we get a little kickback as well, so we would appreciate it. It's 18 plus, and remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. All right, next week, we're going to release our episode on Thursday. That is the 30th of March. That's so we can preview the championship games upcoming that weekend. Obviously, it's international break this weekend, so there's no action in the second tier, but we wanted to include it in our next pod. So yeah, Thursday, 30th of March for that. Join us for that if you can. Until then, bye for now.